Okay. Thank you, Ron. Good to have you with us tonight around the table. We kind of wore out today, but we're going to try to make it anyway and go on. And we're still in the study of the birth and the early, I will just say, the early ages of Jesus Christ, because we've kind of left John behind for just a day or two, or a week or two. And we're going to look at a continuing portion of Scripture. And this is study 13. And we're going to be basically in Matthew 2, but don't leave Luke 2 for just a minute, because I want to make a statement or two before we leave there. And that's where we left off last week. This is March the 27th. 2013. And, as I said again, this is study number 13 in this series, and I didn't know how many it was gonna be, but, we've already got up to 13, and we haven't done but, really a total of about three chapters, but, I wanna read you verses 39 of Luke 2, and 40. And then we're going to go back to Matthew. Because what happens in Matthew is not recorded in Luke. Now, the reason it isn't recorded is I do not know why. Because we've looked at Luke and we've looked at his venture into this thing, and what he tells his friend Theophilus, that it's kind of going to be like an autopsy, what I'm going to tell you and what I'm going to give you. But he leaves out some things that aren't there. And one of the things he leaves out is that of the wise men, or the magi. Have you noticed? We went down through this, and they have come and gone and left and went back home to Nazareth. And not a word's been said about the wise men. Nothing. And was that by plan, or was that just one of these things that took place? Well, it seems like that Luke dealt with the ones that handled Christ, with Simeon and Anna. That they probably touched the Christ child while he was in the temple. But these are others that had association like the shepherds did, but didn't do any touching. And it was an external thing. And the shepherds came, and they saw the baby Jesus in the manger. They saw and they believed. And they heard the angel, and they realized that by hearing and seeing and believing, that they really had been visited by a miracle to them, because it was a sign unto them. And they understood and realized the sign. But so in 39 it says, "And when they had performed all things according to the law of the Lord, they returned unto Galilee to their own city, Nazareth." Now they had been in Bethlehem and Jerusalem for 40 days after the birth of Christ. 8 days and 32 days, because Mary could not have carried the child into the temple. She could not have gone into the temple earlier than the 40 days because of her purification process. And so we realize and we understand that that was 40 days plus the going home, which was about, I'd say by the way the road runs, maybe 80, 85 miles. Because the way the crow flies, it's 73 miles to Nazareth. So, you know, the roads are crooked, and so it's going to take a little while. I don't know how long it took them to get home, But when we get back to Matthew 2, the events that are going to take place are going to take place in Nazareth in the home of Mary. And so if you've seen the installment there is, of the Christ that's going on TV, I've been told, I haven't seen any of them yet, but I've been told that the shepherds and the wise men came at the same time.
They did.
And we're gonna put that to rest right now.
Yes. Total,
in just a minute.
Total inaccuracy.
Because that is very inaccurate, because it's been a while.
But if you poll half the world out there, you know, all the Christmas scenes and everything that you see, and you poll half the world out there, that's what they'll tell you.
Well,
they all got there at the same time.
They're going to bunch it together in order to have a scene in front of their church or whatever.
For all the wrong reasons.
Yeah. So you see, and it's not... That's not an accuracy, but yet we follow that. So we need to find out here, and we're going to go, and I'm going to make a statement. In the statement of Matthew 2, the second chapter, comes between the 39th verse and the 40th verse of Luke 2. The whole chapter of Matthew 2. I'm going to read the 40th chapter. I mean, the 40th verse of Luke, and then we'll go back to Matthew. And the child grew and waxed strong in spirit, filled with wisdom, and the grace of God was upon him. Okay. Anywhere you see the wise men? Not in Luke. Not in Mark.
Yep.
But we got to go back to Matthew to pick it up. So turn with me back to Matthew 2. Matthew 2. We're just going to start in verse 1. And I'm going to try to get through 11 or 12 verses. If time will allow. Because in Matthew 2, verse 1, when I wrote my notes here, it took a whole page of notes in a loose leaf notebook to say what I really want to say about this. And let's just read it. It says, now when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, there came wise men from the east to Jerusalem. Whoa. Okay, so this was something that Luke deliberately
wasn't included.
Didn't include. And so this concerned others. And I think Luke wasn't too big on the outward deal of others.
Well, it depends on the presentation the particular author is trying to
bring out. Forward. Yeah.
Luke's okay. Presenting him as God, so the wise men probably didn't evidently add a whole lot to that theme.
Yeah. So it says, now when Jesus was born in Bethlehem, this is a statement which the people of Israel, including the Roman hierarchy, didn't get the understanding as to why this happened. Now, when we started this study out, we started it out with and the situation with Mary and Joseph, that they were going to have to go to the place of their origin to be taxed. And guess what? Herod was the one that put this into operation. God used a non-believer. God used an enemy, if you will, because Herod the Great has become an enemy. And so he used an enemy to fulfill Scripture, because...
Like he did with Nebuchadnezzar.
Yeah, that whenever they were ordered to do something, then the birth took place in a different location. And so that kind of throwed everybody off. because they couldn't believe it. They couldn't understand it. And so Herod the king here, it says in the days of Herod the king, and Herod the king is also known as Herod the Great. And, you know, there was two or three more Herods that followed him in succession. He was, Herod the king was married four times. But from his first wife was the one that we find in Acts 12 and the one we find in Acts 25 where he married Bernice. So those were his sons. Those were his offspring. And so we don't want to get the Herods mixed up here, but the king was the same one that said, you got to go to your own country to be taxed, to be counted and taxed. Those of Israel. Okay. So, and of course, this is what distinguishes him from the other Herods. And in verse 1, it also, it says, behold, you know, take note of this. There came wise men from the east to Jerusalem. Well, whenever they came from the east, they were traveling west. Well, I've got a map out, and it says the map of the ancient world. And it is a map put out by Broadman Maps of the Abraham's journey. And so from the Ur of the Chaldees over near the Persian Gulf in the ancient coastline where the Euphrates and the Tigris River runs together and goes into the Persian Gulf. That's called the Lower Sea back at that time. This is where these people basically were from. So my question is this. Do you think they were some of Abraham's kin?
Descendants?
Could have been. I don't know. I'm just throwing this out because...
Ishmael.
Yeah, they came from somewhere in that area of Babylon. Or now what we call... Iraq. Because, you know, when you get down to Baghdad, you got the Euphrates and the Tigris coming together in Baghdad, in this day and age. But when you look at this thing, and when you look at this map, well, you realize that north, that gives you north on the scale here, and the coast of Israel's coast is kind of a little bit northeast. It's not directly north, but it's a little bit northeast. Not a whole lot. Not many degrees off of north, but it certainly is. So when you're looking at the map and you're looking at the country and you're looking at north, you realize that east is always on the right side of north at a right angle. Because if they come from the east, if it had been the other way, and they come in from the east, they would have come in from the Great Sea or the Mediterranean Sea, and they'd had to come by boat. But the fact is that they came across the wilderness where Moses brought the people, either that, or they followed the Euphrates River up ways, and then they would have come back down to Jerusalem. But they said they come from the east. So they tried to do it basically in a straight line because this was the guiding of the star. And I wonder, and it makes me wonder, when the people in the wilderness was wondering, and the Lord provided the water, He provided the food and everything for the people of Israel, and that they dug wells and they struck rocks with Moses' staff and did these things to get water. And my thought goes back to that. If they came across the desert that way, did they drink out of that same water that Moses and the And the Israelites drank out of? Now think about that. You know, just give it a little thought and realize what we're talking about here. That it's very, very pertinent, I think, very promising. And because God does things for a reason. And so they came from the east, but they were traveling west. So if you come from the east, and you're running at a 90-degree angle from north, you're going to come straight. And believe it or not, but Jerusalem is almost straight across. It is almost a straight line when you look at the map. And when we get a little further down into the story, it says that they went back, that God come to them in a dream and told them to go back another way. And so I think they were up in, they were up at the home of Joseph, and I think they just crossed over there to the Euphrates River and come down the river, down the other way, going back home, because they did not go back by Herod's, they didn't follow the orders of Herod and they got away from him that way. So they didn't have to. They didn't have to deal with him because I don't think, I think they knew that Herod wouldn't send after them in that direction. So, it said, behold, there came wise men from the east to Jerusalem. So, their journey was from east to west. And, that would have been pretty much the straight line into Jerusalem. Okay? And we need to talk about these wise men a little bit.
They knew some stuff.
Huh?
They knew some stuff.
Yeah, evidently. It said there came wise men from the east. And I looked up wise men and the Magi. And it's 3097 in the Strong's. And it says in 3097 that they're sorcerers. But another word for them was a magician. And I think that's where magi comes from. It's short for magician. And it means, oriental scientist. So these people, it doesn't say that these people are Gentiles, but the wording of this gives you the understanding that they are oriental, that they are of the eastern, they're Medes or Assyrians or something like that. They're not Israelites. Okay. And there's some things in here that it doesn't say. And it doesn't say, their nationality. So I'm sitting and throwing these things out here to you now because, we can only just speculate on that. And, we don't know whether they were priests, princes or kings. We don't know. But what we do know is they came from the east and they moved westward and they come from the area of the Persian Gulf. And that's the area of Abraham's birth in southern Babylon.
Well, the song called them We Three Kings. There must have been kings. The song called them We Three Kings of Orient.
Yeah, well, that we don't know either. So they could have been a prince, they could have been a priest, and there could have been a king in the group, but we don't know that they were just three.
Yeah, we also don't know where they got their information. That's always baffled me a little bit.
Okay.
Well, Hebrews, I agree.
But they saw it. They saw it in the stars, and they were Oriental scientists, and they saw it and realized that something was happening somewhere, and they needed to be there because it was earth-shattering. Okay. And so they come from the Persian Gulf, the area of Abraham's birth is southern Babylon. Now, they may have had a little information as to Abraham and to Abraham's lineage. And if they did, if they were privy to any of that, then they could have said, well, you know, this might be something dealing with that. Because, you know, the stars, the signs, and all
this. A pretty good testimony out of what they tell the king.
Yeah. Now, their trek would be as in a straight line across the wilderness or up the Euphrates and across to Damascus and then down to Jerusalem. But I believe the first, the thing that I have in mind was they came straight across. And I believe that if they had this information and they knew that it was important, they could have certainly used those wells and those watering places that God had set forth for the children of Israel when they were wandering in the wilderness, and they would not have been in dire straits. Now, verse 2. Well, it took a little while to get through verse 1, didn't it? So, verse 2.
Because their questions are very specific.
See, so they came to Jerusalem and started asking questions. And this, you didn't do that much in Jerusalem without somebody raising your brow.
Go get attention.
Saying, where is he that is born King of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east and are come to worship him. Whoa.
See, that's if you were Herod sitting there and they told you this, would your jaw not hit the floor?
Yes. Because, you know, he's heard this before. This isn't the first time he's heard this question asked. But they asked the question, and this is the first question in the New Testament.
Yep.
The first question in the New Testament is, in the New Testament, where is he that is born King of the Jews? You know what the first question in the Old Testament is?
Yea, hath God said.
No, Genesis 3:9. Adam, where art thou?
Oh, where art thou?
He knew where he was, but he asked the question anyway. God knew where Adam was. Wasn't no doubt about it. But he wanted Adam to realize that something had changed in Genesis 3:9. Okay. Where is he that is born King of the Jews? Wow. You know, that had to upset Herod's turnip truck pretty bad. And, and it says, for we have seen his star. Ooh. So, he says, where's this one that's been brought forth? We've seen his star. And the shepherds, when they were in the field, the shepherds seen Jesus the babe. They seen the angels. But these guys, they seen the star. And they had enough of understanding to know that the star counted for the fact that this one in Israel was to be born, was going to be the King of the Jews. That was their question. That was their answer. Where is this young King of the Jews?
My question is, where did they get their information?
I have no idea.
I've wondered that for years, and I still don't have an answer.
They are things that the word just don't tell us. And
how could they be that spot on with that kind of a prophecy? And that's not, not know where they
are. And especially these guys are called sorcerers.
Yeah.
Now, God, you know, he kind of frowned upon sorcery all down through the Old Testament. You know, the Witch of Endor and all these things that we've studied about and talked
only by the death penalty.
Down through the things that have happened to some of the kings in the battles whenever they, you know, sought familiar spirits and things like that. And then we go and these men, however how many they are, and we say there are three of them because they offer gold, frankincense, and myrrh. But they may have been more than that. Who knows? But the fact is, we sometimes take these things a little more literal than we really need to because, you know, that's just...
Think that was, if they were of importance and had that much money, they probably had a sizable entourage with them.
Yeah, I think they did. So the shepherds, they had seen the baby in the manger, and this deals, and I guess let's not go there for the sake of time tonight, but write it down. I want you to look at Numbers 24, verses 17, 18, and 19, where it talks about this one that's going to come that's the King of the Jews. It's in Numbers 24, and it's one of Balaam's, it's one of the prophet Balaam's quotes. It's about the fourth one, I think. And it deals really with Numbers 24:15 through 19. If you went from 15 to 19, you'd kind of get a fuller picture of what's being said here. And he says, "And are come to worship him." So it said in the east was their home area, but they came to worship him. And they said, we came to do homage. And homage there is, or to worship him is 43:52. That's proskuleo. And that's to bow down and fall prostrate before. And, to adore. And so they come to fall down before this young baby. And worship him. And they made a put a statement in there in the strong. And it says that a dog would lick his master's hand for a favor. That's what it means to adore someone. When a dog will lick you to get your favor, to get your attention. That's what the adoring part of that means to adore. And then in verse 3, it says, when or but Herod the king had heard these things, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. So it was something that had been noised about over there, and it wasn't really satisfactory to Herod, nor to the people. And I think it wasn't popular with the people because of the quote in Micah talking about no good thing coming out of Bethlehem. But this is another part of the plan and purpose of God, I think, being worked out because, see, Herod was the one that got it rolling when he says, you got to go be taxed. And so Mary wound up in Bethlehem with no place to stay. Didn't understand it. And when the people heard that, well, there was a Messiah born in Bethlehem, they, you know, they couldn't believe that either. So let's look at this then. When or but Herod the king had heard these things, or on hearing of the arrival of these men and hearing their questions, it says he was troubled. Well, again, I think it had kind of died down a little bit. Because this is sometimes later. It just didn't happen 2 months ago, you know. It's been a little longer than that. He says he was troubled. And so we realize that Herod the king, he's the enemy here. And he's against God and God's will, and he's on Satan's side to help do away with the one that was promised in Genesis 3:15. And so Herod, whether he knows it or not, he's fell right into that satanic trap of that thing that allows him all this consternation to go against the will of God and to go against God. And so it's just another attempt to prevent the fulfillment of Genesis 3:15. So, to cut off the Messiah, the one that was promised. And then it says all Jerusalem was with him. So evidently it wasn't a very popular thing. So most of the people in Jerusalem went along with the king on this thing, went along with Herod the king, the leader of Rome. He was a Roman leader. And they were always scared that they would lose their position and place, you know, especially the Sanhedrin, the council, the national council. And so certainly he was troubled again because it got brought up again. It was like, well, we heard that little old story back there, but, you know, that's not believable. But then when these guys showed up, made a difference in the things that was going on. They didn't. It really, really curled them up a little bit. Let's look at verse 4. It said, when he had gathered all the chief priests and the scribes of the people together, he demanded of them where Christ should be born. So, Herod, being a Roman and not knowing Scripture, decided that he could not for himself make this determination, that he would have to have information from others that were supposedly the leaders of Israel and the leaders of Israel's beliefs. So he called them out. He called them in the conference. He gathered them for a conference. It says he gathered there. That's like gathering grain.
But he knew who knew.
When you go out into the field and you gather grain, you know, you're going to get it all. So he gets them all in. So he calls in the chief priest. And this consists of the high priest and other members of the national council, or what we consider really to be the Sanhedrin, the 70, plus the high priest, and generally his subordinates. And so they came. And then the scribes of the people together. This was the learned men of Scripture in Israel. Now, we also know that during that time, not only did they have God's words, but they had their words that they had added to these things of God. So they had their version mixed in with the things that God had revealed to them through the prophets and the holy ones of God. And so they had all this information at their hand. So Herod could not for himself understand God's word. You know, if you're a non-believer, you're not going to, even in the lowest terms, it's still really tough to come to conclusions and decisions if you don't believe what you read. And so he must use those who may understand and see. And I said may understand because a lot of the scribes didn't understand because, you know, when Jesus came, some of them came to him by night, you know, and says, what is this saying, or what does this mean, or what is it?
Yeah.
And this is one reason why he spoke in the parables, to hide from them the things that they might understand and didn't believe. And I got this out of the Companion Bible. And it says this, that head knowledge without heart love may be used against Christ. And this was Israel's way of doing it.
Yep.
So they took the head knowledge that these men had, but their heart wasn't in the right place. Had it been, they wouldn't have told this to the Roman leader. But being scared like they were of losing their place and losing all of this that they felt like that the Romans had given, that it was better than, well, I guess it was better than what God could give them. And so this was the way it went. Okay. So here's the question. Where should Christ have been born? Where was he born? So this was Herod's question. Where was the Messiah? And they gave the answer. In verse 5 it says this, and they said unto him, in Bethlehem of Judea, for thus it is written by the prophet. And we're going to read it. We'll just go ahead and do 6. And it says, and thou, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, art not the least among the princes of Judah, for out of thee shall come a governor that shall rule my people Israel. Now this is what they told Herod. So let's go back to Micah. Let's go back to Micah 5 and let's look at verse 2 because this is where it comes from. And Micah is on page 1257 in the Companion Bible. And it's not far back. And it's Micah 5. And it says in verse 2, listen to this. But thou, Bethlehem, Ephratah, though thou be little among the thousands of Judah, yet out of thee shall come forth unto me, that is to be ruler in Israel, whose going forth have been from old, from everlasting. And he says, when I send him, his going forth is going to be as a learned one, as one of the aged. And so they didn't tell that to Herod. They left that out. I don't know if this was their version, but it's not exactly the same version that you have that was read to Herod. Because I think that was too much information, you know. It's like the old saying goes, I wish you hadn't said that because I didn't need to know that, you know. But that's the way it was. So their answer was, in Bethlehem of Judea, and it was written by the prophet Micah. And so we read both of them. And so Herod called a little private meeting with these men, with these magi, in verse 7. Because it says this, "Then Herod, when he had privily called the wise men, inquired of them diligently what time the star appeared." Oh, he wanted to know. And this was Herod's question in private or secretly. He wanted to know what time. How long ago has it been? When did you see this star? How long ago? Because he accurately wanted to know. Because he had already set in his mind, and Satan had it set in his mind, that he was going to kill some kids. And he was going to kill some babies. And he wanted to know how far back he needed to go to get them.
Where's the cutoff line?
Yeah, he had already prepared, and he had been prepared like Judas was when he betrayed Christ. He had been prepared by Satan here, Herod had, to go to a cutoff line somewhere down the line. Isn't that something? Okay, they wanted to know when. Now, his first question was where? They said, Bethlehem. You know, there was Bethlehem was where, but he didn't know when. So the time of the appearing star, or the shining forth of that star was very important to Herod. It was something that he desperately needed to know, but he didn't really need to know it if they could find this baby. See, if they could find the Christ child and come and tell him, then he wouldn't have to do what was in his heart to do. But he had a plan anyway, and Satan always tries to have a step up on God, but he doesn't ever make it. Okay. So verse 8. Let's go to verse 8. "And he, Herod the king, sent them to Bethlehem and said, go and search diligently for the young child. And when you have found him, bring me word again that I may come and worship him also." So, you see, the lies are stacking up. One begins to come upon the other. And these wise men, they're called wise men for a reason. And they're beginning to see through all this. And they're getting the feeling now that Herod is not on the up and up with what he wants to do or what he would like to do. So he said he sent them to Bethlehem. And so he still did not see that his taxing that he instituted had anything to do with this birth. He was so blinded that it just went right over his head. The Christ child would have not have been born in Bethlehem. Well, it would, but this was the avenue or the way or the means that took place. So he said, "Go and search diligently. You do the footwork for me, and I'll come and worship. You just get out there and do the footwork concerning this young child." And they talking now about it being a young child, not a baby anymore.
It doesn't say you shall find the babe.
No. They call him a young child. So he knows in his heart about how old this this Jesus has gotten to be by this time. So he had an idea when he asked him about what time did you see the star, or when did you guys see the star and start on this journey that you started out on. Okay. So it's not a baby anymore. He said that I may worship him also. Yeah. He said, when you're sure of him, that's what he's really telling. He said, when you're sure of him, being the one, I also wish to worship him. And that's a lie, straight, just like it was in the Garden of Eden. Satan is still in his lying mood. Yeah. Things haven't changed a whole lot, and we went, you know, this far in the Bible. And so when you get thinking about these things and you get to pondering these things, you see just how desperate he was. And, you know, for a man to be called Herod the Great, that a baby could do him, could make him kind of shake in his boots. Well, he had heard all these things, and he realized that this was a supernatural event. And these supernatural events now are piling up one on the other. He said, man, we got to do something. Okay, verse 9. When they heard the king, they departed. And lo, the star which they saw in the east went before them till it came and stood over where the young child was.
Well, that was easy.
Wow. Now, did anybody else see this star, you think? Were they traveling at night, or were they traveling in the daytime? You know, with Paul, the brightness of the noonday sun
paled
him right to the ground. And so I think they could see regardless of what time they were going. And was it just they only that could see this star?
Might be.
It doesn't say that others could see it. It doesn't say that anybody joined their little band, their entourage. But this is just another coincidence? No.
And then it's moving star.
These were wise men, and this star moved, and they moved
probably
with
it. Probably an angel.
Yeah.
You get right down to it.
So they departed. They departed from Jerusalem. They started out to go search in Bethlehem, but the star changed their mind. And they were directed to Nazareth by the star. So they made that 80-mile journey, whatever it was, north. And this is pretty much straight north from Jerusalem to Nazareth. It is right on the north mark. Okay. So it showed up again to them, just like it did at home. And it went before them. Didn't it say that? Went before them. Yeah, as a guide or a beacon.
Literally led them to it.
Yeah, it's like they had their own GPS.
Well, I say if it was moving, it had to be an angel.
They had their own GPS.
Yeah.
It was directing them just like you would follow a GPS beacon to a place. It was guiding them right there. And it says, till it stood. Okay, it came and stood. It stopped. And when it stopped right over the house of Mary and Jesus. It didn't say anything about Joseph. So, let's read on. It says it came and stood over where the young child was. Now they don't call it they still calling it a young child. It came to the exact place that they needed to go. There was no doubt, no wavering. They knew they were in the right spot when they got there. Let's look at verse 10. And it says, when they saw the star, or the star, the stop star, they rejoiced with exceeding great joy. So, Lord, they were probably pretty sore from their journey. They had come a long way. They had been traveling for a while. They had probably seen quite a few hardships. And so they saw the star that stood over the child. They rejoiced with exceedingly great joy. So they had moved from their homeland to Nazareth on knowledge and faith. Now, again, we've talked about that a little bit. Ronnie has made mention of it about how did they know? I don't know, but evidently they had knowledge and they had some faith in the knowledge that they had that they would go and find whatever it was they were seeking for.
Well, yeah, I didn't think while ago, but they mm-hmm. could have been Jewish sorcerers.
Well, they could have been.
They certainly had, you know, they had their share.
It doesn't say what nationality exactly. They were,
but they knew some truth.
If they were called Oriental scientists, I don't think that would fit the mold of a Jewish person.
Probably not.
Okay. You know, when you kind of put all these things together, and we'll hurry on because our time's getting scarce. And you get to verse 11, it says, and when they were come into the house, not a stable anymore, not a manger anymore, they stayed the 40 days in Jerusalem and they headed home, and now they're home, been home for a while. Not a stable, not a manger, but a dwelling. They were at home. And it says in verse 11, they saw the young child. Just like the shepherds saw the babe in the manger. Their faith was confirmed when they saw. Yeah, they had eyes to see. I don't know how they heard about this young king of Israel, but they heard, and evidently they believed it, because they spent a lot of energy getting where they were at. Okay. It says they saw. Now they beheld with their eyes the young child, Jesus. And that young child there is Paideon in the Greek, with Mary, his mother, in 11. You notice Joseph is still silent. He's not there. He's not listed in Scripture here as being there. But there's no mention of Joseph here. And it says, with Mary, his mother, and fell down and worshiped him. And when they had opened their treasures, they presented unto him gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. So they became prostrate before him, and they worshiped him. They fell on their faces, and they worshiped the Son of God. And Mary was not worshiped. You know, they were certainly not Catholics. If they had been, they would have worshiped Mary too, I guess.
Yeah.
But I'll let that go with just that being said. Mary wasn't worshipped there, so they opened their treasures, their receptacles or their treasure cases, they opened. Whatever it was that they brought, it was in a safe place. It wasn't just in a pocket hanging somewhere. It was precious things of the earth. Okay. And so they opened their treasure cases and they presented unto him gifts. And think about this for a minute. The gifts that they offered him was things of this world. They were things which he himself had created. So they wasn't giving him anything new. They were giving him something that came from him before, already.
All things are created by him and for him.
Yeah. So when you understand Scripture and you realize these things, you see that you can put things together in a way that it means, really means something. So the gold there is precious metals, and that's griosos or something like that. I don't know. In the Greek, it's 55-57. And it's what we generally use to trade with. Gold has been the standard down through the ages in the world. You know, God told Israel, when you leave Egypt, you bring the gold with you. You get their gold and you bring it out, because, you know, this was one way he had of helping them. And they did. They broke Pharaoh and his deal. So it's used as coins, and it's also used as ornaments, because, you know, we have gold earrings and gold rings, and we have all these things that is made of gold. Okay, and then frankincense. And then the Strong's, that's 3030. And it's the word limanos. And when I looked it up in some of the places that I had to look, it was said that it was spices. It grows on trees, and it was spices used in meat offerings, and then the cooking of meats. And so, you know, they didn't have a lot of refrigeration and stuff back then, so it may have been something that took care of a man's system if he had was packing meat with him in some form or fashion. But also, frankincense was used in some of the offerings made to God, too. And so it evidently had a good odor to it, or a pleasant odor. That you wouldn't put something on food that didn't taste good, or didn't make it palatable. And then myrrh, that's 4666. And I was a little perplexed with this myrrh business, because if you look at 4666, it talks about it being an emerald or being green, and also it being a odorous thing. So I wrote this: a perfumed green oil or balm. It could be in form of a salve that one would put on a person for burial. So you got gold, you got stuff to buy something with, you got frankincense, you got something to take care of what you eat with, and then you got myrrh to take care of the things that might tend to you in your demise. So that's the three things. Now, you can agree or disagree with that. But that's what I found. And it's worth, it may be worth your own study in that. I wouldn't tell you not to. I just hope that it would pique your interest a little more. And then we're going to do 12 and we'll close. And in 12 it says, "And being warned of God in a dream that they should not return to Herod, they departed into their own country another way." So if they came straight across, looking at the map, they're about 78 miles as a crow flies straight up the road north. And so it wouldn't be near as far to go across to the Euphrates River where they could be involved in water all the way back to their toward their homeland. So that would be an easier route, but and then that would keep them, every step would be one step further away from Herod too. So they wouldn't have to go back and face him again, because it says they were warned of God in a dream. And this is an answer to a question that they had probably had posed to God. Said, you know, what are we going to do with this man? They were wise. They could see and understand that this man's motives and his operation was not in the best interest of this young child. And so, so this is the way that God speaks to a lot of people. He spoke to his own prophets that way. And so these sorcerers, you know, a dream wasn't anything they just follow it right up, because, you know, it was something that would be right to their understanding. So they opposed this question to God, and I think he answered it there. That they should not return to Herod. They must leave him directly out of their plans. So they departed and to return home another way. And this was their route from Nazareth. So they didn't have to go back down toward Jerusalem and go. They could, as they started back toward the east. So they came west. If you come from the east, you're going west, basically. And so, whenever they got up to Nazareth and they turned and started back toward the Euphrates River, every step they took was one step further away from Herod and from his control in that situation. Because, you know,
well, they've already left him holding the bag. Remember what he told them to do? You go find him, come back and tell me where he is.
Yeah.
I'll come worship him too. Well, he's still sitting there waiting.
Yeah.
He knows by now he's been had.
Yeah.
Or that they've been enlightened to something.
Yeah.
What countries was the man most likely?
Probably came, like Dad said, out of Iraq. Because if you know where Nazareth is, and you know that they came from the east, well, that's dead east of Nazareth is Iraq.
Right there is where Ur started on the map. And if you come straight across, you're going to come to Jerusalem. That is a straight line.
Mm-hmm. And there's basically nothing in between, so they had to come.
No, that was wilderness, really. Yeah, you know, it wasn't
it's
really.
It's like it is today. It's just a big barren desert.
Yeah.
You know? That's why when all the convoy tried to escape out of Iraq on that one road, you know, when the big retreat happened in the desert storm, the A-10s just had them a turkey shoot up there.
Yeah, there wasn't nowhere to hide.
There was nowhere to hide.
It was just
shoot whatever you want to shoot.
It was just desert. The vehicle that they're in was all they had. So that was it. So I hope you got something from the lesson, because certainly we're going to look at the rest of Matthew 2. But this was basically what Luke left out.
And whoever these guys are, to your point, God was helping them. There was too much going on. They had been revealed things that even Herod didn't know, which is not a big deal. But the angel, which the star, it says, which I think is the angel that was leading them along, because it moved and it literally went right over to the house
where the baby was. It stopped and stood.
Then God revealed to them, "Look, you guys better get out of here because it's not good to be here.
Go the other way.
Get away from Herod." So,
this man is. He's an enemy of God.
The Lord is helping these people, whoever they are. Yeah. So they're a little bit of a mystery to me.
They came and did, but they came and did what they were supposed to do. And that was really didn't seem to be a lot of consequence wasn't a lot of consequence to Luke because he didn't include it in his for some reason or other. He didn't include it, but we this is, I think, one reason why I wanted to do it, because we need to get these things lined up and get it back like it really is.
Oh, well, Luke, I was wrong when I spoke earlier. Luke didn't present Christ as king or as God. Luke presented Christ as the perfect man.
Man, yeah.
And so it makes sense that it would be left out of Luke because they came looking for the king.
For the king.
That would belong in Matthew, but it wouldn't belong in Luke, if you think about it.
Okay,
the shepherds belong in Luke because they were lowly men. The babe in a manger was a lowly man.
Yeah.
So it makes way more sense that way.
Okay. Thank you for being with us, and I hope you got a little something out of it. I certainly did when I got in to study it, because it just intrigued me so that it was left out. And I'm kind of glad Ronnie brought that up, because I didn't put it in my notes. I kind of understood it, but still there's so much you're looking at, so you can't get everything. So thanks a lot.